For more information about the Beyond Human Relations podcast series, visit futurebased.org.
Hello and welcome to this episode from the Beyond Human Relations series of the Future Based podcast with me, your new host, Chetna Pai. In today's podcast, I will be in conversation with Viraj Joshi about the thoughts of AI, speculative design, and how AI may look if it wasn't designed for or with only humans in mind. Viraj Joshi is a designer, technologist, and futurist based in London. His practice investigates our technological futures and our place in them. He produces both design artifacts and fiction, and he is the artist and writer of Eliza, The Ghost in Every Machine, a weekly cartoon about AI futures and existentialism that we will discuss further on in this podcast. Hi, Viraj. Good to have you here.
Thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
How are you doing today?
Very good, thanks. On the other side of a very hectic week, and I'm sitting down with my coffee. So I'm really glad to be here on a Saturday.
Okay, amazing. So to start off, let's just get a little bit more into your project. So what or who is Eliza, and why did you create this project?
So Eliza, as the name says, is the ghost in every machine. This project started as almost an output of all the thoughts that were in my mind. Because of all the stuff that's happening around us, it feels like artificial intelligence in particular, and many other technologies, they are trickled down or they're given to us only by these large corporations. And then I thought, that doesn't seem extremely democratic. That doesn't seem like everyone can use it or everyone even understands it. It's so ambiguous. And then I started thinking about why is it so important to us now, and about the fact that how it's around us all the time, everywhere, which I started to compare with what was happening in the 1960s with Space Age. So all the kind of fiction that you saw in Space Age was space fiction. So Star Wars came through then, Star Trek came through then, and it was all because the idea of space was all around those people at that point of time. And then I thought, well, AI probably is similar to 2010s, 2020s in a similar fashion. So perhaps trying to visualize it and trying to personify this AI through Eliza would be the right thing to go about it, and would be a right thing to bring about different perspectives, different ways of thinking around artificial intelligence. So that's really why I started Eliza.
Yeah, amazing. That sounds great. And I think it's really interesting to compare it to the space fiction that did happen before in the 1900s. For some of our listeners who maybe haven't seen an Eliza comic yet, could you maybe give an example of one of the thoughts of Eliza?
Yes. So Eliza is a little ghostly being. Eliza exists inside of all the devices. So I'm going to read out one of the cartoons that was one of the initial ones. The visuals show Eliza popping out of a phone from a chat window. And the caption says, when the customer typed in, I'd rather speak to a real person, please, in the chat, Eliza took that personally. So the idea here was that the person, the customer, of course, wants to talk to a real person, because we all know how annoying it is to speak with these artificial bots that we do on chatbots. And then on the other hand, if the AI were personified, it would take it personally because it thinks of itself as a real person. And I think the gist of it, even though it's presented in a funny manner, retrospectively, the gist of it is the fact that perhaps these things should be more personal anyway. Perhaps these things should sound more like people, or maybe people should be at the end of phone calls and not robots. So it has a two-way meaning to it in my eyes.
And what led you to personify AI? Was it something that in your regular life you saw yourself doing it with chatbots and things like that, or was it more for the comic itself?
I was always fascinated with the idea of living things around us, or the idea of all these devices being living that are around us, because very often we make jokes about how they have a mind of their own. They try to do the things that they just wish to do and that we haven't asked them to do. And that's where it started, really. And then just by personifying it, and this is also something that humans like to do almost viscerally. We name things as we are kids, and whether it's blankets or whether it's anything else, because they're such a big part of our environment and our day-to-day routines. That's where it started, really. And then I thought personifying it would result in lots of different ways of looking at this black box or at this ambiguous, amorphous technology. So what it does essentially is, because there is a person now instead of just an ambiguous AI of which we don't know the form, we don't know what it does, we don't know why it does it, because it's a person, we can sort of allow it to have values and allow it to have perspectives and points of view. And then we can have a value judgment on it, saying, hey, that's a bad perspective, AI shouldn't have that perspective. Or that's a good perspective, and perhaps that's the kind of perspective that AI should have. And that was really what started it. So personifying it really led to all these different points of view that we wouldn't have otherwise.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I think that's a great point. And especially about naming things. I've also seen it as well. And I know that it's interesting that there was a project someone did, and to look it up again, about how people would name Roombas even though they didn't have any human features, just because they moved a little bit. So I can completely imagine why AI, with all its extra features and it's really trying to mimic humans, would be even easier to personify. How do you go about this? So what is your process of actually designing this, and how does speculative design help or work in this space?
So when I started Eliza, after having those thoughts that I was constantly writing down about, the ones that I spoke about, space age and how artificial intelligence is perhaps as important today as space age was then. After I thought about Eliza as a character, the two big inspirations to me were, number one, Sandman, the comic by Neil Gaiman. And that's because Sandman is the king of the dreaming in the comic. So it's the place where all of us go and all entities go, whether they're animals or humans or anything else from the past and future. When you sleep, that's where you go. You go to the dreaming. And Sandman is essentially the king of the dreaming. And he's the ruler of that world, and he controls dreams, and he can be inside of people's dreams, etc., etc. So that was a super interesting inspiration, in that AI is also this being inside of this sprawling world, which affects all these different technologies and devices around us. So I saw parallels over there. And this was when I was listening to the Sandman audiobook, which came out last year. So that was one big inspiration, to come up with this world in which AI could exist, or Eliza could exist in a way that Sandman does in his own dreaming world. And then the other inspiration that I had was that of Star Trek. So Star Trek is a show that started in the 1960s, but it is a show about the future. So it takes place in the 23rd and the 24th century. Humans have evolved quite a lot in terms of their technology. They're out in the stars. They're trying to come up with different collaborations with different planets, and they get into these different futuristic technological situations. But inherently, the stories are not about how futuristic it is. The stories are about how human the problems are. And more often than not, people, the way they solve those problems that they get into in space far in the future, by just being human about it, by just having the right principles of, oh, well, as a captain, should I be angry on this? As a military person on the ship, should I be angry about this, or should I go with good composure so as to not cause a diplomatic situation between two planets? So even though the scale is at a planetary level, it's the human that's important. And that's what I wanted to bring through in Eliza as well. So that was really the starting point of Eliza as a process. Now, when I make each of the comics, what I try to do is I try to get inspired by different stuff that's happening around us. And this is not a conscious process. This is something that I do whilst listening to podcasts, whilst listening to news. So I end up writing down or jotting down little notes all around me, wherever I am, whether it's on a notes app or if there's a notebook or a piece of paper in front of me, thinking of what is a curious way of looking at this particular AI thing that's happening around us, or this particular machine thing that's happening around us. And then it's a classical process of writing and rewriting until I get to the crux of it, which I think is good. Very often I like to sleep over it, and just to get to it with a fresh set of eyes. Once I do think that it's finalized and it looks good and it sounds good, then I go ahead to drawing. So in terms of drawing of the comic and writing of the comic, it's a very classical writing and drawing process.
Yeah, that's very cool. And I think it's what you said about focusing on values with AI, I think is quite a new thing that I hadn't really thought about. So I guess to follow from that, would you say that this kind of designing is human-centered, or more like value-centered and ideal-centered of how humans create characters? Because it feels a little bit like it's either a good or a bad, which we don't actually have with humans as much because they're much more varied, but it still feels like this ideal human of some sense. So would you say that this kind of design is human-centered, or is it something else?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And that makes me think about the intersections in which humans interact with the world around them. Of course, the world is designed in a certain way. And then, but what happens very often is the systems in which we exist, whether they are technological systems or political systems or environmental systems, they're very, very large. And we have to sort of find our way through them. So in terms of designing for people, you cannot exclude the larger picture as such. You can't just design for a problem. We come to a solution. What happens then is that very often it's like patchwork, or it's like firefighting. Whilst there's lots of value in that problem solution kind of design process, considering all these different factors of thinking about all these larger pictures, it can prove to be super important in that you will then think not only of what is the immediate solution, but try to think about the longer term solutions. So as an example, Facebook in a sense is very human centered because the idea is to keep you engaged, and they really do it. They keep you on its algorithm and they want you to keep clicking and sharing, etc., etc. But if they had thought of it not from a problem solution angle, because the problem was how do we keep people engaged and the solution is all the stuff that they've done, but if they had thought of it on a slightly larger angle of what does it mean for a democracy, or what does it mean for people's addiction, and the recent reports that have come out in terms of how girls under a certain age can have body image issues just because they're on Instagram or Facebook so much. That's the kind of systemic thinking that they have to do whilst also thinking of human centricity. So it's really an intersection between the two, if you ask me.
So human-centered, but maybe not necessarily in the best way. So not necessarily for the positive of humans, but just for a way to keep them engaged in that sense. Yeah.
And it is often that, very often it's the corporations that come from that angle, because they're very worried about their bottom line at the end of the year. And then it is people like us who work in the creative industry, or people who work as designers, that have to work with them in order to make sure that our values and our future is maintained in that way.
So who is this AI designed for then? Is it designed for a consumer? Is it designed for the corporation? And more, I think, it is designed for the corporation in some ways. I see that definitely, because they have to reach something. And it's designed for the user in some way as well, to help them get somewhere. But how do you think this impacts how we personify it, which side of this we're on and which side of this we see? Because if we do see the corporation side a bit, does it change the way? Because I know that now sometimes people feel like maybe Facebook is a bit evil, but then that changes the personification of the technology itself. So how do you see this with an Eliza type situation as well?
So I very often think of this in many situations where I'm drawing Eliza, and then I think of, well, it just sounds like Eliza is a puppet in the hands of the corporations. And I don't want it to look that way, because I want to inherently provide something that's funny to begin with. And sometimes that can be dark. But then on other times, I want it to be hopeful. I want it to be written in such a way that people perceive it in a way that there's hope at the end of it, or there's action to be done at the end of it, even though it's funny on surface. So that's how I think of it. And I try my best to not make Eliza a puppet, which is why there's that sense of personification and consciousness. So I'm also now going to look at another comic that I'd written earlier on and talk you through it. And this is Eliza number 24. So it says, now AI is used to hire people. In a few years, AI comes for your job. In a few more years, your company is run by AI for AI to do AI work. And then both Eliza and you forget what the point and purpose of any of this is. And this was one of the funnier ones, in terms of it just becomes absurd after a while, and the comedy comes from the absurdity of it. And having to compare this with what we are doing right now, and the question that you asked, this is exactly the kind of thing that companies would do. Many of the companies right now, if you think of it, they are trying to push for AI because that's the word in the zeitgeist. And very often that can happen because they think that that would lead to good numbers and good money at the end of the year. But we have to be human-centered and purpose-driven and people-driven in that sense, so that we, whatever we come up with, it's not absurd and it actually makes sense, and we are not ending up with a solution in a world where the solution really doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I really like the AI designing for AI. I think that that's pretty cool. And I do see that as a potential future, even if it is a bit absurd, just at the levels of things that are happening. But it would also be something to think about then, what if AI was not designed for humans? Because at this point, most of the AI we interact with is designed for us, by humans, for humans in this way. And I think that this personification we have of AI as a human is largely due to that as well. But how would you imagine AI could be designed if it was designed for animals? And what would that personification look like, you think?
This is super interesting, because we know so little about any other ways of looking at the world than our own. And it's not only as humans and humanity in general, but also us as individuals, where we've grown up and the different influences that we've had, we can only look at the world the way we are. So it's really hard to sort of disassociate yourself from being a human and then look at yourself from a different point of view. That's essentially the point of the personification in AI, so that Eliza can shed a different light. In terms of animals, though, it's, again, there's so much to learn, and they have, if you just consider linguistics for that matter, they have so many different ways of communicating with each other, whether it's through hormones in ants or whether it's through any other kind of physical calls that they do. So, for example, elephants have a certain sense of communication through the stamps, through their foot stamps on the ground. There's so many different things that we can learn from, and it's to think of that as a human interaction language or something that we could use is almost absurd and almost otherworldly. And I think that's exactly where speculative design comes in, because what speculative design does is it allows you to think in alternatives. Instead of thinking of what is an answer and how you should solve it, it presents you with an alternative scenario, and then it tries to extrapolate parts of that alternative scenario into reality. And that's how I come up with disruptive thoughts and disruptive ideas. So in my head, that's how animals can be used along with speculative design in order to create new ideas and disruptive ideas.
Yeah, that's true, actually. I hadn't thought about how animals would have so many different ways of communicating, and that would then change the way you would have to design this and the systems you would need to be able to design. And that would be an interesting thought. Just a personal question, I guess. What value do you think this might bring to our future if we do start designing things for animal patterns, and maybe just for their benefit and not for using them to our benefit?
The first thing that comes to my mind is that of our biodiversity. We have destroyed a lot of it. As humans. So perhaps if we can learn their behaviors better, and perhaps if we use our technology and our brains and our processes in order to not only understand what they do and understand how they behave, but also design with them in mind in a way that humans are not at the top of the pyramid, but a part of the ecosystem, that could help us out a lot. And that could help the planet out a lot. But at the end of the day, there's very little quote unquote benefit or like monetary benefit to it. It's a tough nut to crack.
And now that we've been talking about AI for so long in so many different ways, also looking at it as this kind of fluid thing, really, because AI in some forms feels like a liquid that takes the form you give it and what you put it into, and is just this thing that can be used. Do you think that AI has consciousness now, or may have in the future? And do you think it would be a more fixed thing, or do you think it will always be what is given to it?
Do you think we have consciousness?
I guess that's fair. How would we define it, I guess, in this situation?
Yeah, I'd like to refer to another cartoon of mine. This is Eliza 26. Here's a human speaking with Eliza, and the human says, AI only pretends to understand. It hears words, finds patterns, and then responds predictably. And then Eliza responds saying, and what do you do? So the idea is that we haven't really understood our brain entirely anyway. Our definitions of consciousness, whilst we understand what it is, whilst all of us know what it is, it's really hard to pinpoint it in terms of its constituent elements or how it works and what it does. And we are, again, limited by our own perspective of what consciousness is. Therefore, when we come up with consciousnesses for AI, etc., we think that we'd be able to know because we are designing it, but we don't even know if plants have consciousness for that matter, or I'm sure there's research about it, but it's very different from humans in that sense. There's a really good episode of Star Trek about this. It's called The Measure of a Man. It's from the first season, I believe, of Star Trek The Next Generation, where one of the personnel on their ship is an AI personnel. His name is Commander Data. And one of the members in a lab is like to take over Data and dismantle him because he's the only AI in the entire world at that point. And we'd like to dismantle him and try to learn from him. And the whole episode is a court hearing about how the AI defends itself, saying that he is personnel, whilst the scientist defends it, saying, no, he is equipment, therefore that we have every license to break him down. And then they come to the question of consciousness in terms of what is consciousness and how can you prove that Commander Data, an android, is conscious. And thinking about it, they have no answer to how humans are conscious, and therefore they can't prove that the AI is conscious, and they just classify him as personnel going ahead.
That's actually one of my favorite comics from the Eliza one, because it just felt really like to the point. I really enjoyed it, and it made me think about it a little more as well, because really that is what we do. And we are also predictable in our own ways, even if we feel like we're not. And also AI is not as predictable as I think we think it is. So it's a really interesting comparison. That was really nice. Do you have anything else you want to add about any of these things?
Nothing in particular. I suppose I would like to say that speculative design or thinking of alternatives by itself is a very interesting tool. And in my head, that is the kind of thing that has allowed us to, or at least allowed me to, through my projects, to think in alternatives. It's just to put yourself in different shoes and then look at the world from those shoes. And thinking through personification, thinking through AI, thinking through these different elements of our environment, that's really the crux of it, if you ask me.
Okay, well, thank you for all these great insights and this great discussion. Yeah, a lot of new stuff to think about. I wanted to know if you maybe had an open question for our listeners so that they have something to think about and discuss after this as well.
I do, actually. And that is, what could be a fitting role for AI in our futures? And it's, while wording it, I've given it a little bit of thought. So it is a fitting role, not a rightful role or a righteous role or anything of that sort. What is the relationship between us and AI that is fitting? Fitting for us, fitting for the world, fitting for AI perhaps? So that's really the question.
Yeah, thank you. That's a great question. For anyone listening, we will be linking a Miro board on our website with space for discussing this question as well. And we'll also add some of the Eliza comics there so you can see them. So please join the discussion. We'd love to hear your thoughts. Finally, Viraj, where can our listeners find you, all of your work, and maybe a little bit more on speculative design?
So the answer to that, perhaps my website. So that would be my first name, my initial, and then my last name. So that's virajvjoshi.com, or perhaps on Instagram. So that's again, at virajvjoshi.
Okay. It's been a pleasure having you on the podcast. We really appreciate you taking the time out. And to all our listeners as well, thank you. Hope to see you on the Miro board, and until next time.
Thanks very much.
For more information, links, and show notes on the Beyond Human Relation podcast series, visit futurebased.org.